Welcome to Talking in Stations, a podcast about EVE Online. This is season two. So we're all back after a short break, and we have a ton to talk about and a lot of people to do it with. I want to say hi to all these guys and introduce you to some new faces you're going to be seeing a lot. But first, Carneros, how you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Awesome. Elise Randolph's here.
Hey, how's it going? A lot has happened. Who knew that EVE pilots would keep doing stuff while we were off air? It's pretty wild of them.
I know. Didn't they get the memo? I need to wait. So Ashtarothy's back.
Greetings, fellow Empyreans. I am Ashtarothy, and it is good to be back.
Isn't it? And of course, we have some new faces for you to meet. We're going to introduce you to, and you've seen them before as guests, but they're going to be joining Talking in Stations, and we're going to have some really cool new content to develop in certain areas. And first, I'd like to introduce for Wormhole content, Exuki.
Hello.
Off screen, we have Alec.
Hi, everybody.
Alec is going to be doing some really interesting stuff with me about geography. So we're going to do a lot more map-oriented content this season. And Exuki's going to be doing stuff with wormholes, resurrecting his podcast in a sense. But we'll do it on Talking in Stations and talk about wormhole stuff. Kaskor is, of course, still with us as one of our experts. But this is going to be like a dedicated show that Exuki will handle. And I'm sure Kaskor will be on that quite a bit. And last but not least, we want to introduce our one guest. Couldn't resist not putting him on the show. Killabee is here.
Hey, what's up?
Apparently, your car in flames. So I heard you tweeted. Tell us what happened.
Well, I don't know. Basically, I was sleeping, and then police kind of just rang on my door, and they were like, "Yeah, well, your car was burned." I was like, "What?" So I went down with the police, and it was just the wreck of my car, basically.
And a couple
of the neighboring cars were also all burned and shit. So, yeah.
Did they ask you if you have any enemies?
Well, yeah, they did, but it's a very small town, so guilty, to be honest. It could have been some technical issue, I think, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, joking aside, sorry about your car.
It was a company car. I don't have to pay anything for it, so it's fine.
Oh, that makes it much better. Wow, that's amazing. Hopefully it wasn't an EVE player. We know that Killabee as an FC breaks a lot of hearts, so you never know. But that's pretty interesting. And you're going to have a barbecue, right?
Yeah, tonight, but not with the car.
Not over the car, okay. That's probably for the best. All right, cool. So what are we going to talk about today, guys?
How about the stuff on the page that we spent hours on last night?
I'm throwing it to you guys so that I can
grab that page. Okay.
You haven't memorized it yet?
Well, first of all, it's a lot.
Welcome
to the first show of our second season. We took a little break, as you might remember, if you're just waking up from a long sleep. We've moved into a season's format, kind of like television. And this is the inaugural show of our second season. We did have a little bit of a surprise in the middle of our break. So we take 2 weeks off, not a big break, just 2 weeks. And then in the middle of it, we get this opportunity to interview Hilmar. So we got lucky, and we put it all together, and we did a special show in the break, and we did it on a Thursday. This is what I'm remembering.
Yeah.
It was 2 hours after he did a Reddit AMA. No, he did an EVE Online Forums AMA, Ask Me Anything. So he had just, he'd just done that, taken a break, gotten something to eat, come back on, and gone on with us. Be sure and listen to the podcast, by the way. Dave, Matterall, what was it like to organize that show? Was it different from a normal show?
Yeah. It was different because it honestly felt like, if you guys have seen Game of Thrones, it's kind of like when the king comes in the first episode to the Northern Castle, and there's all this to do about it, and it's all hurry up. This is happening right now. So it was like that. There was a lot to do really quickly. But we had been in talks, and CCP is really wanting to help certain groups. So we were already kind of like aware that it was a possibility or something, but we didn't get confirmation until the day before, I think. So we had to hurry up, and then we had to not waste the opportunity because we wanted to ask him questions that we had to come up with a strategy on questions. And there was a lot of ways to ask Hilmar questions, right? You could do the direct way, which is what the AMA is for. So we decided not to do that since the AMA would cover it for us. And that was any player asking whatever tough question they want. AMA, of course, stands for Ask Me Anything. So we were going to let them ask whatever they wanted to. And we reviewed almost real time what people were asking and reading it with a computer out to the audience as a pre-show. So we kind of covered that, and we figured that would be covered. So the idea was we collected ourselves and said, what kind of stuff should we ask him? We all met as a group, right? And we submitted questions, and not just the people that were on camera, but the TIS crew in general. And there's a lot of good questions came out of there. But in the end, we decided that I think it was, what was it? Carnero said, we're going to ask him the right questions. And then I said, and we want to ask him the wrong questions too. And he's like, what do you mean by that? And I thought that was really a good moment, because the wrong questions are not what people don't want to know, but they're the questions that can live longer, in my opinion. Like, the idea of having Hilmar on the show wasn't to get information out of him, because one, if we ask him tough questions about what's coming up in EVE, he's going to say, can't tell you. If we ask him questions he's already answered, he's going to give the same answers he gave before in a different way. So the idea was, those are the right questions. We'll put those aside and ask him the wrong questions. And the wrong questions were all the stuff that really gives him an opportunity just to talk about EVE Online like we do, and that way demonstrate just how much he likes it. And I think we got that. I think if you listen to that interview, you very much come away knowing that Hilmar is excited about EVE Online and he's focused on it. And that's really all we wanted to accomplish.
Yeah, when we were chatting with him, I had no idea the extent to how he would answer some of the questions. And, you know, I was a little bit worried that he'd be like, oh, blah, 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 just corporate speak for everything. But you can really get a sense for the passion he has for the game. And the enjoyment he gets out of it. I mean, he was referencing stuff that happened like 2 weeks ago and referencing things that happened like 10 years ago. It was pretty nice. It's always good to know that the guy that's in charge kind of knows what he's in charge of, so to say.
And you could hear him laughing, right? Like when he's doing the Caldari outlaw, I'm tired of playing by the rules. And he starts laughing to himself. It's like he clearly has an appreciation for all the stuff that players invent and all the stuff that happens.
I like the question where we asked him, so you're the boss all day at work. You go get in the game. Are you the CEO of your corp there? He's like, hell no. When I get home, I just want someone to tell me what to do at that point. I'm tired.
I almost made a joke like, isn't that kind of a dominatrix relationship, right? It's always corporate executives that are getting beat up by these women in leather.
Exactly.
Oh, all right. Yeah, wrong show.
So we're saying this interview took a very different direction once the cameras were off. It's the sense that I'm.
Yeah, I didn't bring it up for that reason.
We can leave it for Talking in Stations After Dark, the new show
coming. I'm extra sorry I missed out.
Talking in Dungeons with Matt Earl.
So thanks. That was the Hilmar interview that happened over our break. Check it out. It was great. There's another thing that we did. Do you want to talk about how we're capping off season two, Carnero?
Okay, yes. Well, in an impulsive moment of generosity, not discussed in any of the pre-show planning, our boss, Matterall, decided to give away an Avatar class Titan. A real one, fully built. You will be
and the skill book too.
Oh, and the skill book too.
Yeah, the only thing I'm sure about the logistics of moving it.
Sorry, Ashtarothy jumped in. What?
Sorry. No, that's good. But keep in mind, you'll be responsible for the logistics of moving the ship. Good luck. Ask for help if you need help. EVE is a game best played with friends.
That sounds like a bad plan.
No, we'll get him.
Don't ask Killer Bee for help unless you're in his corp. But that, yep, that's what it looks like before you have gone to the extra expense of skins, which I highly recommend. The lava core looks good everywhere in space so far, I find. Shall we do it now?
Yeah.
Ready?
Well, this is what we've done. We've put together, it was basically an entry form that you filled out.
Do the short version.
Okay. The entry form basically said, come in, basically just, you know, write one of your favorite episodes and tell us about it and how it affected you and that sort of stuff. And that's how we collected the people that we collected. And that amounted to hundreds of people. So we're going to announce who the winner is. McLeod, you helped with this. We'll do a rare engineer entrance.
Can you make him talk on camera?
Chief.
Say what
now? McLeod.
McLeod.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, right. I rolled the row number. It was you who had the actual name, but the row number was 249, which was
it's a solid
What's
number.
The name?
Here we go. The winner is, and let me make sure I get this right.
It's this row 249, dude.
Yep, it's Lizard Breath. Anybody know who that is? I actually have some knowledge that she appears on Open Comms. She is the winner of an avatar and the skill book to fly it. And thanks for being Talking in Stations fan. And thank everybody for being Talking in Stations fans. Really appreciate it.
I wonder what a lizard breath smells like.
You have to get very close.
She's a streamer, according to Raiden, who runs Streamfleet. So, yes, streamer Liz has won the avatar from Talking in Stations Season 1. Congratulations.
Congratulations on your new avatar, Rex. Some disassembly required.
All right, nice. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. So we'll put that away and move on to Season 2. And there is a lot to talk about.
She's in chat.
Oh, is she there? Let's congratulate her. I guess we could do that on a fair. Anyway, again, everybody, thanks for being fans. We're happy to be able to give back a little something, and we hope that you stick with us for Season 2, and then Season 3, and then Season 4, and then next year. All right. Let's go to player news. We'll start with war declarations. Winter Coalition and Legacy are fighting. Who's involved with that?
No idea.
Well, we have Killer Bee here, so we'll definitely bring him in first. What's going on with the fights that have been happening there?
So who's involved is a tough question, right? Because it's always a matter of who brings in their proxies and whatever you want to call it. But technically, it started with the whole nip of FRT and Legacy ending a couple of weeks ago, I think it was. It was some stuff. I think you guys had Willy on for that show. I think I was here too for that, actually. I think it was the last show of Season 1, if I recall correctly.
That sounds
might
right.
Be wrong, but it's, I think that's what it was. And ever since then, the machinery has sort of started working. ProGot has posted an Alliance update. I think it was about a week ago. And he basically had a very detailed post on this campaign of theirs. And then I think they started doing, went to the offensive. And we had the big fight last night. I actually don't know too much about that one. But we also had a very big fight this morning about a IHUB, about an IHUB that is sort of in a Keepstar system. So basically they were fighting over an infrastructure hub. Obviously, it's a big deal if you manage to kill the infrastructure hub of a system that has a Keepstar in it, because then you can bring in your capital forces without being, kept out by a Sinusoidal Field Jammer, which is the most common strategy to defend a Keepstar these days, is to make sure that the system itself with the Keepstar in it is jammed and all the systems around it are jammed. And that's pretty much what they were fighting over this morning. It went pretty bad for Legacy and their friends. ProGot got pretty much all of his nightmare fleet bombed on a gate because there was so much tide that they wouldn't go through the jump tunnel. It was sort of stuck on a gate, so they all died to bombs. And then goons were there too in a Megatron fleet, and they got their Megatron fleet killed by, I think it was a mix of bombs and a very well-placed Lance Doomsday, which is obviously a super weapon that only a Titan can fire, that wiped out the entire goon Megatron fleet. So overall, it went very poorly, and the IHUB was defended as well. So it was sort of one of the first big bangs of this whole thing. And we'll see where it goes. Like I said, I think it could be a very big one. It could technically get a lot. Oh, there's a video of the lands. It could be a very big one, I think, depending on who else gets involved, who brings in their, you know, friends and all that kind of stuff. So we'll have to keep a close eye on it and see what's happening.
Yeah, it is really interesting that you mentioned it can kind of grow. And the reason for that is because even though, like, all the groups in EVE aren't necessarily fighting, like, Pandemic Legion and goons don't necessarily care about a little dispute between Legacy and Winter Coalition. But it gives them a really good excuse and a really good means to fight their enemies, right? So you can have, if Winter Coalition brings in Pandemic Horde, then the Goon Swarm can come in to help Legacy a little bit. And then you have just everyone fighting and getting content, but that's not necessarily right on their doorstep, which is really great. As all those groups, like Goons, and they don't want to have a war on their doorstep. They don't have to deploy or anything. But if they can kind of like mooch off of someone else's involvement, even better. And that's kind of like the whole mindset around this entire engagement. So it should be really, really cool. And I think Killer Bee is right. It's going to evolve into a pretty massive, widespread fight.
Also, that lance that we just saw on the video, those are a lot of fun to fire. Special thanks to Killer Bee for putting a great tutorial video on YouTube on how to fire your lance with your Titan. Helped me a lot. Thank you. Ms. Lizard Breath, you're going to want to check that out.
She should, now that she owns an avatar.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's pretty much going on there. I think obviously, like I said earlier, you know, obviously the people actually involved, they have a lot more background. So maybe if this thing heats up even more, next week you could have Noros or Progod on, and they can give you a bit more of the backgrounds, because I'm not necessarily involved in those. As for NCDOT, we're kind of just watching what's happening, and obviously we're getting involved. Like Elise said, it gives us a great excuse to go shoot our enemies, and this is exactly what we did, for example, this morning for the IHUB time. We had a fleet there as well, and you know, that's always very welcome.
Anyone else have comments on this?
Well, I can say someone that lives adjacent to Fraternity, in some ways this has been kind of like an ongoing fight that's been happening for a while. Scalding Pass, Immense, that whole area has been, I would say, politically unstable for a while, with Test being kind of the shadow that everyone was tracking to see when, if, how they would come in and get involved. So they are, and I think in the way that everyone that wasn't frat is hoping they would get involved. So it's interesting, and I'm really excited for that conflict, because up to this point, it's been super fun. So with Test in, I think things are going to take, obviously they're going to go to a whole new level, and we'll see what happens. I mean, it's assuming, I mean, with Goonswarm and Pandemic Legion, if they get involved, I think it really throws things for a loop. But if it's just Legacy versus Winterco, I think that's a pretty exciting, even conflict that probably won't break the servers. So maybe we can have some really good fights that aren't, you know, server destabilizing, can actually get some dead Titans.
Someone in Twitch chat mentioned something that I think is very, very important in this this conflict as well. It was Manixar, I'm sorry if I pronounce your name wrong, who said, I think the time zone issue will keep this smaller than most think. And he's referring to the fact that Winterco is obviously primarily Chinese. Now that they have ELO and Origin in them as well, they do have a growing USTZ, of course, but their strongest force is in a Chinese time zone, which is around like 13, probably like after downtime to like 1500, 1600, I would say. And test strongest time zone is not the China time zone. So it's obviously something that FRT can really abuse to their advantage by just having all their important stuff timed in their strongest time zone that a lot of other alliances are usually quite weak in. And Progot did say something about that in his alliance update, or when he gave some sort of speech at the end of a fleet. He basically said, I'm just going to quote him here, finally, it's important that we set expectations now. This war will be long. We have a difficult time zone to fight in, along with the general advantages the bad guys get from defending. By pacing this properly and taking time to pick up battles, this will allow us to sustain the campaign, something for which we are much better prepared than Winterco. And then he went on, but I don't want to read all of it. So Progot does acknowledge the fact, obviously, that they are in a disadvantage in that time zone, but it seems like they are confident in their ability to sort of drag it out and make it a thing of attrition rather than, you know, like a blitzkrieg of some sort.
Yeah, and it's actually pretty interesting if you look at how, like, these time zone wars or these time zone fights tend to happen. The best history we have is when like Western groups fight Russian groups and vice versa. What ends up happening is if you're not really prepared, eventually what's going to happen is the side with the time zone advantage is going to use that over and over and over again until the attacker numbers dwindle, and then they're going to do like an alarm clock or something like that, where they're going to come on at a time where you don't necessarily expect them. They're going to punish the hubris, right? So it's really heads up from Progot and the whole Tappy side. That you can't get lackadaisical, you can't rest on your laurels. You have to like kind of keep up that momentum, otherwise you will be punished. And we did see like a little bit of kind of like, I guess, large punishment going on. Tappy tried to do a dread bomb against Fraternity. It kind of worked out in their favor, but it was also costly at the same time. They lost 80 dreads or something, and they got a few Titans as well.
So,
What is the
point? What is the catalyst or the impetus of all of this conflict?
Well, that is a question I cannot answer. I actually don't know. That's probably something that Nora or Progot would have to answer. All I know is that it all sort of started to spike or heat up even more when the Winterco Legacy Nip ended a couple of weeks back. And that's really all I know. What their motivations are, not sure. Probably content. Because, no, you know, you don't really invade anyone anymore these days for space. Because that's just not what you want. You don't want to be, you don't want to own too much space. Which would be a nice segue into the question that I wanted to get to, if Matterhall's fine with that.
Oh, wait, we're going to put Spire off for just a minute.
Oh, okay. There's
a little more to talk about here. I think... Elise, is this, I'm a little bit lost. Is it?
Yeah, I mean, we're just, so we were just trying to glean, if you want to kind of make an informed decision or just a guess, I could say, at why this fight is going on. I think Hilby is right. People don't necessarily want space. Winter Coalition has worked with PL and NC before in the past. They've worked with Horde in the past. And so it's just a kind of proactive way to, keep that from spiraling out of control for Test and Legacy, right? You don't want unfriendly people on your border. And if you can get a border fight, and you don't have to deploy, you have a massive advantage, and you can have a lot of fun at the same time.
So, I think if you look at it in the very very technical game player mode, there's a problem with the Chinese coming to the Western server, let's say, because there's a server that's just for China, right? But these guys come to the Western server to play, and they arrive a few at a time, and that creates a problem because there's never a threshold where they feel like they can be big enough to compete in the way they want to compete. So what you have to do is to try to gather them up, and instead of them filtering through the game coming and going, you want to gather them up and give them a mission, and that's what this is very much about. At least this is what Wind Spirits told us a few episodes ago when he was trying to build up Fraternity and in the Winter Coalition. And part of that is to get them content in their time zone. And so there's really only a couple choices that deep into the night for most of Western Hemisphere, and that is Russians or Australians. And so this was... this is something they wrestled with for a while. And there was, in addition to that concept, there was also bad blood between Test and Winter because there were a few skirmishes. Now, first of all, they're regionally close to one another, which makes it easy. You don't have to travel far. But second, Test is a big group that is the right scale for fraternity to want to fight with, right? Because they're also becoming a big group. And there were some skirmishes a while ago that turned kind of negative as Vili kind of made fun of what Windspirits had called Chinese players, which are more like athletes, whereas Western players are more like warriors. And what Windspirits was trying to say was that kind of like the Chinese fight fair, they come in and they kind of expect to fight straightforward fights, and they're really good at executing that way. But whereas Westerners will have all kinds of spies and undermine the other person's fleet authority and comms, and will ambush and attack and just do stuff that's not expected because it's a cutthroat game. So those two culture clashes were talked about, and Billy picked up on Chinese being like Olympic athletes and made fun of Winter. And so then that kind of started some bad blood. So now you have kind of a rivalry happening between Test, which runs Legacy, and Fraternity, which runs Winter Coalition.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting dynamic, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes. And one final thing I want to say about it is, and we touched on it a little bit, but Legacy also includes they're allied with former Russian bloc, XIX, and some other groups in there. And you know, that Russian bloc has had a pretty massive impact in EVE Online over the years, right? They've taken over the old North and ousted what was then considered to be an empire that was too big to fall, right? They've held drones for a long time, and now they're kind of on the sunset of their career, right? But recently they announced that they're going to kind of come back. They announced that they're getting the band back together, and that's another big thing, right? So the time zones really do mesh quite well between the Russian time zones and the Chinese time zones. Not perfectly, but they do mesh very well. So, and that's a side that the Legacy have on their advantage for them.
I think we also expect a brawl, like because Chinese are like they're ferocious. They want to fight, and they're going to fight. And Elo Knight is kind of like that. He'll take fights that are bigger than what he should be taking, but he takes them anyway. And so now that he's in Fraternity, it kind of creates that kind of momentum where they're willing to take things on that normally more cautious FCs wouldn't, and win sometimes. And on the other side of it, you have Russians who are kind of the same and always have been ferocious about playing. They jump into fights. They're not really risk averse.
I think that the comparison between the Russians and the Chinese is potentially apt because there is something very much to be said about like what rallies groups together in EVE. And while a lot of groups are through ideology or maybe through philosophy of how the game should be, the Russians, as Elise pointed out, have historically been pretty good at banding together and leaving a disproportionate mark on EVE because of their kind of unified front. They fight among each other, but generally speaking, we think of the Russians as operating in at least some sort of block, right? A black box that we don't really understand. And in the same way, as was pointed out, if the Chinese can hit that critical mass, then they could create that same kind of cultural identity force within EVE. Which is incredibly important because the most successful organizations in EVE tend to have some sort of loci of kind of rallying outside of the game itself. You know, Goonswarm had something awful. Test has Reddit. Russians have cultural identity, and now Chinese are having their cultural identity. And what happens is that when you have that external locus, then when you get smashed, when you take damage, when you take a loss, instead of it becoming a matter of questioning your own forces or questioning your own leadership, it tends to solidify the us versus them mentality, which makes them even more dedicated to their organization. Very similar to if you watch the Andrew Groen video for the release of The Empires of Eve, and they talked about the Russians and how they got taken down to a very tight core. It would be an incredible mistake to underestimate any force that has some sort of locus of control outside of Eve itself.
One quick note before we move on. That video that was put up by, I guess it was a Doomsday video, was actually created by McLeod. He clipped it from Jordy, whatever his name is, and it's rapidly climbing up his best clips ever. Apparently it's over 2,000 already, and it's only been a little bit. So that's kind of fun. Good job.
Jebby is a very funny online streamer, a great personality, and he's super fun to find.
I love what he says during the clip is just hilarious. Like, they're getting barbecued, the turkey is cooked.
He just is an endless cache of Jebbyisms, right? That you can't even make up if you tried, but they make perfect sense once you hear them.
It's just a fountain of memes. He's beautiful, man. I love it.
But moving on, kind of something kind of similarly related, we have this kind of big fight going on or kicking off in the southwestish area or southeastish area that involves quite a lot of people. But that does Goonswarm is involved there, but they're also involved other places that Killaby and people from Watchers and Show were mentioning things that are happening in the Spire and Malpace. Killaby, you kind of wanted to touch on this earlier. I'm going to let you do that now. What's going on over in Dronelands?
Yeah, so somebody asked us on Twitch what's happening in Spire. Basically, what goons have been doing recently was they have and I'm very sorry to the goons in chat if I don't know what your different SIGs are called, but it started with a SIG that is, I think, led by Thomas Lair, who is called Liberty Squad, and they deployed to Uimon, as well as another squad of theirs, which is called Whelp Squad. And I think SV stages there now as well. No, actually, I think SV is still in Venial anyways. So basically a bunch of squads of goons deployed to Uimon, which is a low-sec system, very, very close to drones, because it's very close to that huge region gate that leads to LXQ, I think. And they have been starting to harass the renters that live in some of those drone regions, most of them actually. And they have been particularly focusing on NC dot renters. So that's mostly people living in the Spire and Malpai. And I think that's the biggest two chunks of our renters, as well as Ethereum Reach and the Kavala Expanse, which I think are Horde renters. So they have been causing some trouble over at that renter space. And it's part of, or at least that's what I think it is, it's sort of part of their whole program of obviously trying to diminish our income, reducing our income, because we, especially NC Dot, we get a quite significant amount of money out of Malpai, especially every month from renters. And obviously, goons have also launched their own renter program, I think, in period basis. So they're kind of doing the whole thing of, you know, sort of putting a lot of pressure on the renters that live in the Spire and Malpai at the moment, and basically saying, hey, if you want to have safe and stable renter space, you could just come to us to period basis. You could rent from us. I think they do it free. They offer the space for free. Maybe Carneros knows better than me at this. I don't know. Do you offer the space on period basis for free? Or is it also, do they also have to pay a fee to move in there? So I'm not actually sure.
And the reason you're not sure is because they haven't actually opened for business yet.
Oh, so,
that's the only reason, because you would know if it were actually open and they had announced it. They're running a little bit behind schedule on posting their expected price lists and policies and everything.
Okay.
Sometimes Goonswarm is a little bit like a government, and they use layers and process for everything, and it's very, if you like to play Eve in a sort of shoot from the hip fluid fashion, this would drive you up a wall, because they've got people in charge of different things and they're super organized and paper trail and regular meetings and status updates. It's crazy. Anyway, but we've been running around. I actually have a character in with one of those SIGs up there running around in the Spire and Malpais. Had a lot of fun. It's basically just everything you're describing, but not putting in the ads in local that would say, you should come here and rent. The Bastion has a rental program too. We haven't put any ads up there saying, oh, come rent from us. But I think when they architected this Squads and Sigs idea, they had intended for it to be a little bit more like that. Instead, we're just running around mostly hot dropping on people or things like that. There was one fun one the other day where we deliberately left our bridge Sin, Black Ops battleship, uncloaked in space and pretended we didn't realize it until they scanned it down and landed on it to gank it. And then we lit a Sino and jumped in and killed whatever showed up. That was fun. I got a 2 billion ISK Legion kill on that one. It was fun. Made me smile. But this is not important stuff. It's just little hot dropping. And at the same time this is going on, there's a fleet formed up in the Serpentis pocket and fountain, the NPC pocket there, on a bridge Sin, or a bridge, I think it's a widow, bridge widow down there. And they're bridging out people too. So this is sort of happening at both ends of the galaxy on each other's renters. Or is it too soon to bring that up, Matterall?
Yeah, I think we'll get to it in a second. I want to actually talk about this renting program in a minute. I think it, what you were saying is accurate. It hasn't actually been deployed yet. It's just being either organized or maybe they're putting down the infrastructure, because the way that it should work, at least the way the Imperium does things, is they don't really charge for renting. They charge the taxes for usage of the structures that only they can own. And that way they don't get flipped. They don't get taken away. There's no surprises. On the flip side of that, the question is, do renters want to use other people's facilities, or is that psychologically hard for them to do? Because one of the things you get to do in a rented space is put up your own structures, charge yourself no tax, and produce your materials at the lowest rate possible. And there's some psychological benefits to that. So it'll be interesting to see, apart from the harassment of the competition, where renters are going to go.
And it's very much just a psychological thing, because if you think about it from a risk perspective, you're a lot safer using somebody else's multi-billionist structures than putting down.
Right.
Likewise, you're never going to pay for the cost of dropping the structure out of your savings from not charging yourself a tax. So there's literally no financial reason to do that.
Except there's a psychological reason. That's what I mean. So you're right. Like, logically, you use somebody else's stuff. They take a little bit of the tax. That's fair. But is that how players play EVE Online? Don't they want their own infrastructure in what will be a protected system by the people renting it to you to do the thing that you want to do at the lowest cost possible? And I mean that psychologically, not necessarily on the books. It might be actually the same cost, who knows? But, you know, just that feeling of, this is my thing, this is our place, this is our hangar, this is our home.
Yeah, it really does depend on the group renting the space, because, you know, I've had to deal with renters before, and some people, they could not care less about having ownership of space. They just want to go somewhere, make some money, get out, and then do something else. And other people, it's like it's how they're starting off. They're starting their little empire. They want to plant their flag. They want to say, hey, this is mine. I can show this to someone. I can invite people out. I can invite them if I want, yada, yada. So they're just like, they're two vastly different groups of people. And it's hard to appeal to both sides.
Yeah, I think there's another thing here, too. Look, if you're in period basis, you're below Delve, right? Like, you got to go essentially through Delve or Esoteria, whatever. But you got to go through Delve to get up to Jita, where the markets are. So if you're making stuff because you're renting space, you have a market nearby, and that's good and that's bad. It's bad because you have a ton of competition at that market, because all the Delve is basically selling through that market, making an assumption here. So you're either really far away from the market, or the competition is really high, so you may not feel the fulfillment of benefiting from having your own situation where you can lower your prices down. Because in the end, if you lower your prices down and then you try to sell it and it's still under cost to build, then you're not really gaining anything. And I think that would be incredibly demotivating for industrial groups. And the trick to being an industrialist is to find a place where you can produce for less, but then sell at a good rate. Those two things are important. And I'm not sure that period basis is going to psychologically supply that. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you're currently living in Malpais and Spire and getting dropped all the time by these guys, there's also another psychological aspect of, well, if I join these guys, they won't be dropping on me, so I don't care. Well, and I think that's obviously what the Imperium's going for.
Yeah, I think that's totally the other side of it is, well, if you're not a stable place, then you're not going to psychologically like that either. And I think that is why the Imperium is harassing Bot as much as it is to try to psychologically destabilize the feeling of security, which would really work against all the things that I've talked about, having your own little space, doing your stuff cheap, it's all yours, et cetera, et cetera.
So, and also it has another effect as well, right? So Goonswarm can now, or the Imperium can now turn around to Legacy and say, hey, look, we're helping you by making sure that other people don't get involved because we're burning their farms and fields in the backyard. What are you going to do for us? Where's our recompense and stuff like
that? Yeah. All right. So sorry, I just wanted to add those two cents in there because, again, we look at the psychology and the anthropology of EVE Online, not just the combat and the doctrines and all that kind of stuff. We like to really tear this game apart to figure out how to predict where people are going to go and what they're going to do. So, but we're done with that. So what happened to Goonswarm? Is that the next thing here on this list?
Yeah, similar to I'll let Cornelius take it away.
Well, I was involved in the fight, but also in a little pre-part of the fight, too, that gives it a little bit more context. So these guys have been forming up sort of day after day in a system called WYTAC in Fountain, in the Serpentis NPC pocket. And that's the home of a group called, my apologies, Gangbang Team. And then they've got some allies nearby and stuff too. And they've got some visiting folks from Pandemic Horde and Volta that are there at the moment. And a couple others, miscellaneous people, not super officially there people, just miscellaneous groups looking for some fun on the side. So they tackle a Bastion ratting hell. And we ping a fleet to go help them. And we're aware of this down here waiting with a dread bomb. So we're really careful about what we put into the system to save the hell. And we get them saved and safed up. And we're just starting to clean up the battlefield when we get a ping, two blue titans tackled in this other system in Fountain. We're like, okay, we got to get down there. Okay, it's a little bit too far. We'll have to do this and this. We burn there as quick as we can. And there's a video. Yes, thank you for putting the video up, Mr. McLeod. And you could see that they did this thing where they, I think they started with tackling a Rorqual that belonged to Finnish Space Jaegers, a corporation in Goonswarm. And they've got a few dreads, just a little bit of dreads that they put in there as bait. And FSJ, and it'll kill the Rorqual too, but they're hoping for more. And FSJ isn't paying attention to Serpentis Pocket and the people formed up and what's going on. And they just send a Titan or two through the gate to go try to like blow this stuff up and save the Rorqual. No, that's not the right. And then they try to slip in a third and a fourth Titan. No, no, no. That's not how you do things in this situation. They ended up dropping a huge dread bomb on these people. And this video shows it up until the next part where they show it just enough where if you're watching carefully, you could see the Titans die and a couple of faxes and then suddenly you see the screen filling up with initiative super capitals and bastion capital. And then after the video ends, we burn down almost all the dreads. I think like four got out. But it was a pretty impressive thing. And the Mitanni's like shaking his head, guys, don't do dumb things with super capitals if you're not under the umbrella. You know, how many times do we tell you, thank you for this object lesson? But yeah. So you could lose your stuff anywhere.
Yeah, and this is... Lizard breath. Yeah, exactly. This is actually just goes to show another neat thing that's happening in EVE Online. Like the video we're showing is from a corp called Digital Dopamine, which recently joined Volta. And Volta, the guys who live in Thera and just use wormholes to kind of bait out certain things, or bait out fights, or just drop on any target that they want, right? They don't have to... they're truly nomadic in a sense, right? And they're kind of feeling a resurgence recently, right? So a few months ago, Volta closed its doors. They're like, we're done with this. Actually, I guess it's more than a few months ago. But they closed their doors. They put a hiatus. We're like, we're done with this. We're going to go do a few things. So the corps split off. One group joined Pandemic Legion. One group joined Skill Yourself. And then some other groups joined some other smaller groups and other wormhole groups. Then a few months ago, Volta was like, okay, we're done with Skill You. We're going to go back and start up Volta. We're going to go back to Thera and start doing our thing. And that created like this huge momentum of a lot of small nomadic groups kind of going back to that play style. And it just goes to show you that this is what they can achieve, right? This type of beta is something that they've been setting up for quite a while. I've been working with them a little bit, and like a few, even like 6 or 7 weeks ago, they were trying to pull a bait like this whenever the wormholes lined up, right? And it just never quite landed. But they finally got that. They finally got someone to make that mistake where they could then punish it. And it's just fascinating to see how tenacious these guys can be.
Can you tell us real quick about that playstyle, the Thera playstyle?
So essentially, you live in Thera, which is the named wormhole in EVE. And Thera has a bunch of different connections all over the place. And it's a massive system as well. And it's got two NPC stations. You can't put citadels or anything in there. So what you do is you live in that station and you can just rage roll a whole bunch of different holes to go to essentially any area of space that you want to. Within 40 minutes, you can get to any region you want. And with that, you can then just go in and hunt for the lowest hanging fruit that you can find, be it like Auroracles ratting somewhere, super ratters and stuff like that. And because it's so predictable, you can actually set up different baits and different ganks, or at least plan them on like week to week. So you can say, oh, there's these guys in Fountain that were, we see on the kill boards that they're really hard and fast with their supers. So we're going to roll a few Fountain holes, see if we can get close, and then we're going to go and try and bait these guys out. Or they can do the same in Malpais, or they can do the same in the Spire. They could do the same in Geminate if they want to, or in Venal. They can just essentially go wherever they want to and kind of on a whim catch people who are ratting and stuff like that. They also, they're super excited about the changes to the NSA that's coming in the next patch, which we can get to in a little bit.
Oh, I think everybody in Small Gang is looking forward to that.
Just wanted to point out that there is not actually a wormhole. Only heathens think that.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is Exuki.
Also, you said something about jump clones. Can you jump clone to Thera?
Yes.
Is that unusual?
Well, you can't jump clone into wormholes. So, like, I have, you know, we have structures in our wormhole. They have clone bays. If I get potted out and I'm in a Mar, I can't jump clone back into my wormhole. I have to physically travel there. But you can jump clone in, which also means it's not a wormhole.
To be clear, that's because the Sisters of EVE have stations set up in Thera. It's the only system in Anoikis, since I'm not going to call it wormhole. It's the only system in Anoikis that has structures, like NPC structures, stations in.
I mean, I didn't quite some might say it's the only one. Others would say it's just not one. It's not a tomato-tomato, though. No wormholers consider Thera a wormhole.
You can jump clone in or out, but not in? Is that sort of...
You can jump clone in and out of Thera.
Hmm.
And you can jump clone out of... out to a... If you have two structures in a wormhole, you can... jump clone to a different structure in that wormhole.
Ah.
Well, it's interesting. The identity of Thera is in question. I like that. We'll cover that on one of your shows, Izuki. Okay, so, and also we should say that we have a show that was done on season one about wormhole ambushers. That is the same kind of a thing where you have people who aren't really wormhole corporations generally or in the typical way. What they do is they use wormholes to hide in, and then they ambush known space. So LoSec, HiSec, or NullSec out of those places. Okay, what did we have next? So that was Goon Swarm, or... Is that one done?
Yeah. And so Volta is the group that set up, or that worked with a lot of the other groups that set up that gank and fountain on those titans that Carnaros went through. And, you know, I think Volta is going to be that kind of flavor of the month alliance. Is going to like really heat up this summer. So I might want to keep an eye on them. They're probably going to be really mad at me for saying that, because their success is often predicated on people not realizing that they exist. So. But I'd say, as a completely neutral party, I'd say keep an eye on them. They're going to do some really cool stuff. I think this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, Volta.
I have a little story about Volta. Hang on a second.
All right.
A couple months ago, I'm at a business meeting in London, downtown London office. And I'm walking down the hallway with the guy I'm having the meeting with. And this woman is coming the other direction facing us, and she's wearing a Star Map t-shirt. And I stop her and I say, "You play Eve?" She's like, "Yeah. Who do you fly with?" She looks at me and she goes, "Volta." I go, "Oh, the Bastion." Okay. And the guy next to me goes, "You could tell she played Eve from that t-shirt?" "Oh, yes. I know those star charts. No Eve player would not know those star charts." And we just had a moment to catch up there for a second. I never heard her name. I don't know who she is in real life. I don't know who she is in game. But she's damn cool. She flies with Volta.
That's magic. Sorry. Right there.
So a bit more about Volta. What did they, at least, what have they been up to like in the last couple of years?
So they kind of come up and go away, come up and go away every once in a while. For the longest time, a lot of their activities seem to be centered around the Alliance tournament. They were, I believe, and I might be wrong here, but I think Starfleet Commander, who is kind of the leader of that group, created Volta just to participate in the Alliance tournament for Alliance Tournament 10, I believe it was. And they got second place. That was the year with the Etana and the... Oh, no, they got first place, actually. Yeah, they got first place. So they're the group that got all the Etanas. And they beat the Hun Reloaded, and they got all the, I don't even remember what those ships were, but less good than the Etana, which is probably the best Alliance tournament ship ever. And then after that, when Thera came about, they really adopted that level of playstyle, that nomadic level playstyle that Pandemic Legion and Black Legion used to be known for. Back then it was called like a wolf packs type fleet, which wasn't always a term used kindly. It was kind of like a way to mock smaller groups that didn't have the chops to do bigger fights and stuff like that. But so they made their name there through Thera, and they then started working with other groups, and they were referred to as the Thera Boys, right? So that was their spooky moniker. So whenever you got dropped on out of nowhere, it was because of the Thera Boys were there. And so they've kind of come together recently, as I was saying before, in the last few months. And I think a few other groups are also joining them or rejoining them, kind of thriving, going after that play style of just roaming anywhere around in New Eden. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, the patch notes that are coming out on Tuesday, because a lot of the changes are to like capital proliferation and capital use, and using capitals for PvE are going to be a little bit more risky. And when a change like that happens, the pendulum kind of swings back into the favor of the attackers and the roamers. And I think Volta are probably some of the best when it comes to that.
Well, we're almost there. We'll talk about patch notes in just a minute. A little more about Volta, though. They were a big part of SkillU, weren't they?
Yeah, when the game kind of balanced, the pendulum kind of swung too far in the direction of defenders, and they were having a hard time, combination of burnout and mechanics, are having a hard time being successful. So they said, you know what, these guys in Skill Yourself are having a really fun time. Let's go join them. So they closed up shop for Volta, joined Skill U. A lot of other groups that were in Volta before kind of splintered off elsewhere. And then after a while, these guys in Skill U or in Volta, in the alliance of Skill U with Capco and them, they were like, yeah, this was fun, but it's boring now. We want to get back to our roots. We want to go back to going in there and roaming from there and doing that roaming. So, you know, they just tried different things out and they know what they like. So they're just going back to it.
Now, I may be wrong about this, but was Volta kind of a break off of Triumvirate, or were they involved with Triumvirate at all?
I believe, and I might be wrong here, but the Volta was initially created to have Starfleet Commander's Alliance Torment team because he wasn't doing it in Tri. I'm probably wrong with that one. I think Tri, either way, that it did come out of, they did have a very close relationship at one point.
Yeah. I think they came out, I've heard they've come out of Triumvirate a long time ago and have since done their own thing. But anyway.
Yeah, the Corp is, the reason it sounds so confusing is because the Corp is called Volta, and they've, or the Alliance is Volta, and they were in Verge of Collapse before, which was essentially the same thing. But yeah, the same, the Starfleet Commander and the crew, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Yeah. All right. So what's this about Malpass and the Spire? Or did we already talk about it?
We already did a little bit. It's goons that are just kind of barraging that areas for their own renters, right? So, or the Imperium. The Imperium. I'm sorry.
Imperium SIGs.
Imperium SIGs have independently deployed to Euamon.
I'll go watch this show when we finish taping.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm lost writing people in chat and stuff like that. So, let's move on then to finally patch notes. I think you were about to do a tremendous transition that I blew, so sorry about that. Patch notes, what's going on April 9th?
That's soon, quite a few, by the way. Things. Yeah, it's on Tuesday, right? It's coming right up.
Good news all around.
Let's hear analysis from you experts.
Summer of dead carriers and dead Rorquals, and it's going to be glorious.
Yep, that's about it.
It's just a giant balance pass. There's a lot of good subcap love and a lot of good capital opposite of love.
So essentially the Rorqual, the panic module gets shortened. The local tank gets cut almost in half in terms of the extra boost. So Rorquals suddenly become a little bit more killable, especially for...
But the excavators, they've been such a horrible menace that they're going to make them easier to kill now.
But as an apology gift, I guess, the Rorquals are getting better boosts. So if you are a Rorqual, your life is worse. But if you have a friend that's a Rorqual, your life is a little bit better.
They won't boost a Rorqual. It'll boost other ships that are not Rorquals.
Yeah. It's designed to make it so that a Rorqual can scale with a fleet.
All right. I don't want to focus on the Rorqual. We'll get to that in a second. What I want to focus on is why the capitals are going to get killed, because that's what the big prediction is, right?
So the network sensor array, which is one of the best modules you can put on a carrier fighting anything that's not super capitals, and even then, sometimes you still want it. It's a 60-second time module, so it has a 60-second cycle time. Now you will not be able to warp while it is, which means a lot of these ratting carriers are going to have to make a choice. They can not use the network sensor array and skip out on, say, the fantastic lock time that it gives you, or you can have this up, but when people come into system, you're going to turn it off, potentially 60 seconds of just like sitting there, possibly able to be tackled. And that's after you notice there's a problem. So the theory would be that there's going to be a lot more carriers out there in very inopportune, vulnerable situations, or they're going to give up a lot of their income, which I think is less likely.
And this is not the only direct attack on ratting income as well, because on the subcap side, you actually have the VNI lost its bonus to drone speed, which is going to make it much, much more difficult for the full flight of heavy drones that the VNI relies on to consistently kill, especially like the smaller frigates and stuff.
Yeah, in fact, it'll even make their flights of light drones less effective at killing anything that happens to tackle it if they get caught.
And in addition to both of these, we have the very ominous, I can't find the exact wording of it, but oh yeah, adjustments have been made to the respawn rates of certain nullsec anomalies. And this is the second time that we've seen that.
Hold on, Ashtarothy, you're talking about like the income stuff. Let's deal with that second. The first thing I want to talk about and cover is the conception, the concept that more capitals are going to get destroyed, and why.
Well, I would say that the biggest reason why is because of kind of the most dramatic change out of all of this. What we've been talking about so far have been just tweaks to numbers here and there. What we are getting is a new mechanic, which is diminishing returns for remote repair systems. Up until now, basically, you can just kind of scale up your remote repair, especially when it comes to faxes. And then if you can't just straight up alpha the enemy, then you're not going to destroy anything, which in a capital size fight becomes very meaningful, since capitals have huge buffers. And so these fax repairs are able to effectively ensure that most fights remain one-sided, or at least mostly focused around destroying faxes as opposed to a more complex kind of combat scenario. What we're having now is a diminishing returns that functions a little bit differently than previous diminishing returns. Instead of just being the number of modules, it is effectively a diminishing returns on the effectiveness of ongoing modules. So you can't just like throw a bunch of light reps on something in order to disrupt somebody's capital reps. But it is true that as more capital reps, or as more reps in general, are applied to the same target, they become less and less effective. They're making kind of a soft cap for how much you can protect your own forces.
And this doesn't just mean remote shields and remote armors repairs. It's also cap transfers. So those have the same diminishing returns applied to them too. The thing is if you've been in a lot of cap fleets, you've probably been in one where a carrier, you go to jump out and one of the carriers says, oops, I'm below jump cap because I accidentally left my NSA running. And now, not only will that person not be able to jump out, that person won't be able to initiate a warp. He is sitting there like a loot pinata until he turns the thing off and it cycles down. That's part of the reason why we think a bunch of those will die. People just forget the thing on.
Yeah, and the way the meta is right now is when it comes to these super cap fights, you know, EVE Online pilots, they min-max everything. Give them enough time without any balance change, they'll find the perfect harmony. And right now what it appears to be, and what basically every group out there is they just have everyone train for make sure that your alt can fly a fax. It's like a suicide apostle if you do armor stuff, or a Minakawa if you do shield stuff. So the goal is like, oh, we can save any of our capitals that get tackled by just dropping all of these ships on them. This change is going to limit the effectiveness of that, right? So as Ashrathi was mentioning, there's going to be diminishing returns for remote reps, which means if you do have the ability to kill something through reps, more and more and more reps aren't going to save you, right? So if previously you would just jump in 200 apostles to save a ship, and then there's basically no force that can break through that. Now if you do that, something like 160 of those apostles aren't going to be doing nothing, right? So the attackers will have an advantage in that sense if you haven't adapted. And defenders are also going to have to change their style of play up a little bit. They can't just throw apostles or faxes at a situation to save it. They're going to have to have a little bit more tactics involved.
Now, it's worth pointing out that the diminishing returns are scaled such that at very small numbers, you won't be noticing much difference. A few percentage points up to like 10 guardians or something like that, 14 guardians. So if you're thinking in the small game warfare sense, it still makes sense to have your logistics core. It still makes sense to use like one or two facts to support your fleet. that you're not going to notice much, if any, difference at that point. It's mainly impacting these mid to larger scale fights. It's also worth noting Remote Rep getting a nerf in high sec in that you won't be able to use neutral logistics and war decks at all, which is going to change the face of high sec war probably forever.
For example, the Bastion likes to fly sometimes with the rest of the Imperium in high sec in those wars and run around and do stuff, like to defend the test market keep star. And we can't do that anymore after Tuesday. Today we can do it by setting our protection thing to green. Or I can't remember what it's called. But if you set your safety to green, and the Bastion only flies remote rep or boosters, we can mix in those fleets, and we can go around and participate. We can't declare war on the same people alongside Goonswarm and then work together. It's considered a separate war. You still get killed, Concorded. There's no way to work around that. But on Tuesday, we can't do DPS, we can't do Logi, we can't do boosters, we can't work with them at all. We have to go in as a separate fleet and just operate separately.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. It's also going to be boosters, which is kind of nice.
So, Izuki, what do you guys think of these changes that are coming?
So most of the cap changes aren't really going to have much of an impact for Wormhole. In Wormhole space, you pretty much never see the amount of faxes on field required to actually start seeing diminishing returns. Even the largest battles I can think of, I don't think you ever saw enough faxes that you actually, you know, are going to be getting anywhere on the diminishing returns. You know, as a hunter who's out in Nullsec, I also don't think it really will change much, because if I have a fleet, and you know, even though your larger wormhole groups are probably between 20 and maybe 40 people in a fleet, if we have a super tackled or maybe several carriers tackled and faxes start trickling in, you know, maybe with like one or two, we can neut them out. We can try to power through. We can bump them apart. But once they've dropped five or six, you're kind of reaching the point where it's unlikely that my fleet will ever kill anything, because I just don't have the manpower or the firepower to muscle through that. So, you know, I don't think the diminishing returns are really going to change much for me, because I already wasn't going to kill it with five non-diminishing return faxes, and I don't think five faxes are seeing significant diminishing returns as is. So the point at which the diminishing returns become relevant was already past the point where I was ever going to be doing anything. Some of the other cap changes, you might see hunters and wormholers getting some more kills depending on how people adjust to the NSA changes. I view it as like optimistically this will mean that I might get to kill more things. Pessimistically, nothing's going to change, but it won't be any worse probably.
So while I agree that the remote rep and cap changes and all that sort of stuff is very much in tune to affect like larger scale battles to make them much more fulfilling, I would say that overall, a lot of the cap changes, if I could like put one theme on the changes to caps, it is to reestablish the balance between subcaps and capitals. And there's two changes that we haven't really mentioned that really hits on that. One, super carriers, at least, and I believe carriers too, they are having their fighters, they're making it so that fighters have a much more harder time hitting faster ships, like small, fast ships. But if they've been webbed or slowed down somehow, they actually are able to still apply to them. And so what that means is that a carrier or a super carrier that's just trying to fight on its own may not be able to do much. But if you have sufficient subcapital support, then you will be able to kind of still apply. The bigger change is actually to Titans/Dreads, which is there's kind of this ongoing thing where Titans are just super good at like everything, because you can just slap high angle weapons on Dread or on Titans, and then use them in all kinds of ways that are incredibly flexible. And so in response to that, effectively Titans are having their high angle Dread or high angle weapons significantly nerfed, while Dreads are getting a correspondent buff to their siege mode to kind of counteract that, effectively removing Titans from the I Kill subcaps game. Overall, we're seeing a lot of changes that make capitals much more fiddly and much more difficult to punch down.
I have a question maybe for Elise, or maybe Alec. I wonder what this does in the grand scheme of things, because it used to be, I imagine, that you could drop enough faxes that you essentially would put up a wall of defense around these super capital ships, these super capital fleets that were deployed. And at that point, there's really no engagement to be had, because we've seen that if you grow an engagement too big, like 9TAC-4, the game will freeze up. So you basically withdraw, or you never have the fight in the first place. Now it seems like you are guaranteed, if two major forces collide with super capital fleets, you are guaranteed to get some kills.
Yeah, it seems that way. I think Elise would be better positioned to say how it'll actually play out, but I think the general theme will be we're going to see more wars of attrition rather than one-sided stomps.
Well, and that's my thing. If you're going to see a war of attrition, is there a balance of power shift in the favor of the people with the most Titans, aka Legacy, or the Imperium and Legacy with them? But Elise, go ahead and tell me what you were going to say.
So you're absolutely right in that if you do have a massive number, or rather the ability to field the large numbers of damage, you're going to be liking these changes, right? The way it is right now, as I mentioned before, that the meta has shifted to, we don't really care about damage. We will throw walls of faxes at the problem that they can't break. Or if they do break, they have to shoot the faxes first, and that gives us a chance to kind of come out. Or it gives us a chance to adapt and just sacrifice these faxes while we kind of extract our larger toys. But now the dynamic's going to shift a bit. It doesn't necessarily mean that every fight is going to be different. There are going to be lots of fights where you still want to throw a buttload of faxes at the problem. But the dynamic will shift to the point where if you do have the ability to field a lot of damage, instead of taking faxes, you might want to consider taking other types of ships to kill damage, right? So the idea is right now defending is all through reps. In EVE Online, there are two types of defending. You defend either through ample amounts of logistics or by killing the other guy's damage faster than they can kill yours. And with capital balance, the way the capitals work right now, that second form doesn't really exist. So for these large fights where, you know, people throw hundreds and hundreds of billions worth of ISK on the battlefield, stuff will likely die a lot more. And people are going to have to make decisions as to the makeup of their fleet. It's not just going to be a straightforward capitals and everyone else in a fax alt, right? You're going to have to make a decision as to what you want to take in order to round out your super capital force.
In sub-capital fights, logistics adds a lot of complexity to the fight. You have to make a lot of good decisions, right? Can I break the reps that are here? Do I just take out DPS first to lower their income, the incoming DPS? Do I go after the reps first in order to try to make it so that I can kill DPS faster later? There's all kinds of really good decisions that have to be made in a subcap fight, including involving logistics. Unfortunately, with the introduction of the fax on the capital side, that pretty much it was already sort of a problem, but it got solidified. That the faxes effectively were like the hit points of the capital force, because faxes can't necessarily get assistance when they're repping, so you only really have one choice, which is to start burning through faxes. With this change, you're going to see a little bit more of an opportunity to make different decisions. Have we hit a point where I can slam through the faxes maximum rep? do I still kill things too slowly when I do that? Can I still force the enemy to push off their faxes? You know, it makes the fight just a little bit more interesting. Whether or not the high-end FCs are going to take advantage of that right away, whether or not it's going to take a while for people to kind of adopt the new philosophy and all that, that's what's going to be seen as far as I'm concerned.
So the interesting thing here is that there's just a bunch of little changes that kind of have been happening over the course of a few patches, right? So the reps from the faxes got nerfed a little bit. The fitting got changed a little bit. The cap use got changed a little bit. Now we have this change to stacking in terms of reps that changed a little bit. And so when you take all these little things together, it does create a relatively large or does have a potential for a relatively large impact. In terms of the NSA and the fighter damage application nerf that we were seeing, like the fighter damage application is actually pretty significant. So when you talk about just the NSA change by itself, the network sensor array making capitals have to be static for the 60 seconds that it's active. It's easy to say, oh, well, I'll just take that off. I won't use that to rat. And I'll just shove a bunch of sensor boosters in my mid slots and blah, blah, blah. It's the same exact thing. But you have to take into account that if you do that, you're losing mid slots such as utility or omnidirectional tracking links, something that helps you rat a little bit better. And then when you look at independently the change to the nerf to fighter damage application, you'd say, oh, well, I'll just counter that with mid-slot items, these omnidirectional tracking links. And so now when you take both of those changes together, you say, I'm sacrificing my mid-slots for sensor boosters, and I'm sacrificing my mid-slots for these omnidirectional tracking links. I can't do both. The net amount of that I can earn with my carrier ratting just comes down just a little bit. Right. And so that's one thing. And then you have the insurance changes to capitals. That's changing. It's going to make using capitals a little bit more costly, especially when they explode. And you just, all these little things add up to a relatively large change. And I do think we're going to see the end result of that is dread bombs being more effective once again. Dread bombs have been in this awful place for the last few years. Where, you know, you have these like 50 or 80 dreads, and every once in a while, like happened this weekend, you can get a guy when they're not expecting it and kill a few titans. But then you lose all your dreads and it feels awful. Now I think you're going to be seeing these dread bombs be a little bit more effective, but they're also going to be more costly at the same time.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, one of the things that we were discussing earlier is that the guys that got caught, the Goon Swarm guys that got caught, were outside of the protected radius of super capitals, the super capital umbrella that protects them. Now it seems like if you're willing to sacrifice the dreads, the super umbrella is only going to be able to save so much. You're going to be able to get something out of it. And Noggin points out, won't this strengthen the hand of groups like Snuff?
Yeah, absolutely. It'll make groups like Snuff, who have dread caches. I mean, that's the alert, right? They've got dread caches all over the place. If they do catch you, they may be able to kill you a little bit better. Yeah. Or instead of getting one Titan, they'll get two Titans. Or instead of getting two Titans, they'll get four Titans. Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, they strike with a lot of speed, so it's not just an issue of the wall coming down of faxes protecting the stuff. But at a certain point, they have to give up, because when enough faxes drop, there's nothing else they can do. So they have to like just either die or retreat. But at this point, they can really just fight until they actually die, trying to get as much as they can.
So the main hubbub that people have been like making of all of this is this affects the small guy worse than it affects people like Goon Swarmer and the Imperium, right? Because the Imperium, okay, now they won't have this wall of faxes to help, faxes and supers. To help, but you know, they'll just adapt, and instead of that, they'll have like a 40-man jackdaw fleet to accompany the supers and ratters and stuff. But if you're not part of a massive group, then maybe you can't afford to do that. So that's kind of been the interpretation I've seen from a lot of people, especially people like the Imperium. They think that nothing's going to really change badly for them, but it'll affect everyone else. And when you do scale in complexity like that, the groups who kind of thrive on complexity do have a massive advantage. But I will say this one thing. That is the case. Goonswarm and the Imperium will be able to do that. But it requires people online to do that. It requires people to be in space. It requires that sub-cap fight to happen. And, you know, the more of these factors that you throw in there, the more of a chance that something can go poorly or someone will make a mistake. So, you know, I do believe it's a net positive change for everything. And it's not only capitals that are getting their income stream nerfed, right? We talked about the Vexor Navy issue having a bit of a nerf in terms of one of its bonuses going away. Not necessarily the biggest one, because a lot of them just throw sentries out anyway and go around. The Gila drones got nerfed massively, which, again, probably isn't a massive change for ratting. It is more for abyssal sites, where 9 times out of 10, you're taking a Gila to run abyssal sites.
It is definitely designed to make abyssal sites more interesting. It's not that significant of a change because there's no damage difference. It's just if your drones are under threat, then they're under more threat. And as it was right now, you can basically ignore the threats to your drones if you're in a Gila in Abyss space, which is definitely not the point. So now you're just going to have to pay attention to your drones in Abyss space. But I guess I disagree with the fact that the smallest groups are going to benefit from this. It's going to benefit the people that can hit the damage cap of the faxes. But more importantly, I wanted to put a pin on all of this by saying that the key here is that the changes that are being made almost exclusive or, you know, without exception are to inelastic needs. Okay. People are not going to suddenly go, oh, well, I guess we just don't need to rat anymore. Or, oh, we don't need to mine as much anymore. The Imperium is used to, at this point, their income. The people that rely on these rock walls have become reliant on the resources that they bring in. The ratters are still going to want to rat. There are some people that are like, oh, people are going to quit over this. I would be surprised if somebody quit just because you can't necessarily rat in a VNI or in a carrier as well as before. Like, there's so many other reasons to stay in the game. So if that's your only reason staying in the game, I guess whatever. Most importantly, these are problems that players will have to solve, will have to compensate for. This is not like spit poles getting nerfed into the ground, so now we just move on to the next flavor of the month. You will still have to figure out how to be surviving in a rope wall. You will still have to figure out how to fight in faxes and carriers and titans, because these are still optimal solutions. They just are much more difficult to do effectively and much easier to punish mistakes. That's all.
And just one last thing, we did touch on the Rorqual nerf a little bit. So the Industrial Core and the Panic Module got shortened. Industrial Core got weakened, actually quite significantly. And also the things that actually harvest the minerals, the excavator mining drones, have been decreased in their mining yield by like 20%, which is also pretty massive. And other changes, the volume increased of the excavator drones. So, you know, if you do get caught, you can't just throw out a mobile depot and throw all your excavators in there, since they do represent a pretty massive cost, especially when it comes to the Rorqual. If the Rorqual dies, whatever. It's the excavators that seem to be worth more. So that's quite a big change. You know, if you look at this change holistically, which I hate that I actually said that word out loud. But if you look at it like in the bigger picture, more or less income from space, more risk, more stuff exploding. So this should overall take more money out of the economy. And, you know, just by virtue of more things dying and making fewer amounts of dollars, which is a good thing. CCP, we know from the AMA with Hillmore, they believe that a lot of the problems are, a lot of the problems facing EVE right now is that there's just too much money in the game, not really anything else. So this takes money out of the game. It's a good thing. I'm excited. I can't wait to see stuff dying. I can't wait to see how people react to the changes. And yeah, all that stuff.
Great. Thank you, Elise. I want to edit that just a little bit. It seems like income generation that is mostly AFK is the biggest victim of this, right? A lot of that I'm going to do this while I do something else. AFK are sitting there not really paying attention gameplay that you can scale with multiple clients seems to be the thing that's getting a little more restricted.
Yeah, that is getting hit the hardest. But I think all income generation in general is going to get hit a little bit.
Yeah, there's some talk that some of the Rorqual pilots that have, you know, five or six Rorquals out at the same time are like, I already made two more characters to make up for the loss in income. I don't know if that's true, but that's how they're playing it off. Thanks.
I've unsubscribed my 35 accounts. Rah!
Well, you know, okay. Plex is going to also affect people like that. They're going to have to. But maybe we'll talk about that in the next chill session. We'll go into talking about Plex and why it's going so high and what Injector's roles in it. And I also want to talk about the thing that happened with Turkey, their prices, Turkey the country. Their prices are, to buy Plex have gone up really high, and we'll talk about why that happened. And also we'll talk about Gentan's tournament that's coming up. Those are just the announcements that we want to just talk about here. I mean, talk about in the chill sessions, but announce them here. But real quick, though, we do want to give Jin a little more time. At least tell us what Jin Tan's thing is.
All right. So this is going to be his second iteration of a small kind of format tournament. It's got just a handful of teams that are involved. It's going to be, he's got a pre-show April 14th. It's going to be on, I believe it's going to be on the CCB channel. And then he's going to be running the actual events on the 20th and the 27th. So there should be a good amount of explosions. He was talking about it today. You know, the fights are quite short. They're going to be like 3 or 4 minutes on average. So it's not going to be long, drawn out types of battles. And it should be fun. We've got a lot of really, really qualified and just hyper good people involved. Like some of the teams, he's actually released some of the names of the teams or all the team, the members of the teams he's released or is releasing in a couple days here. And if you look at it, they're kind of like a who's who of competitive EVE stuff. Brave Newbies also has a team. So I couldn't get a little dig into Dunk Dingle.
Just who and Brave.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on team names. It really irks me, the stuff that people get away with in EVE Online naming stuff. Like, I don't even want to say it, but there's some really terrible ones and not the ones that you are typical. And the reason I was been thinking about this is because there was a news program, I think on NPR, talking about California and how they have, you know, those privatized custom license plates that you can get. What are the judgment calls that those guys do in California to make sure that people aren't writing obscene stuff on their license plate? And I think they have some pretty good rules that CCP should follow too. You know, when it comes to
the mud.
People naming things offensively and discreetly and stuff like that. I know you guys don't like it. I mean, I know you guys are totally fine with it and it's kind of funny and stuff like that.
No, it's
but the children.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like like it feels like, oh yeah, we should have all of the options. Like it's about expressing yourself. But then you try to explain the Alliance tournament to someone who hasn't played EVE, and you get about three sentences in, and then you start having to talk about individual teams, and then you realize that you pretty much can't proceed.
Well, just to give you all the names are actually pretty great, so I think Matterall, you'd be happy to read it, yeah. Or happy to watch it. Some of the team names are like Zero Talent. Spoiler alert, they are literally the most talented. I think everyone there has an Alliance Hornet gold medal. House of Goondor is the Goon team, which is pretty fun. Brave Newbies just has a name after themselves. Stay Frosty, name after themselves. Templars Calzive, named after themselves. So no one went to the edges when it comes to naming their teams.
All right. Well, good. Maybe there's a little more controls than CCP puts on the Alliance tournament. All right. Well, we have to wrap up the show. One, thank everybody for watching the debut or the premiere of Season 2. Welcome back to Talking in Stations. We're going to produce a lot more content this time, this quarter, basically, this season. So we're looking forward to all that stuff. We're really happy to have Alec with us and Izuki. Right, guys?
Looking forward to it.
And it's great to have Carneros and Elise back for more. Do not forget that we have the Thursday show with Artemis. He can't make these shows. So we have the Thursday show, which has a great amount of specific topics that they hit. And the next one that they're going to be hitting, it looks like, we'll be talking about Triglavian stuff and what's going on with that capital ship, if it's even a ship that's like 10 times bigger than any Titan we've ever seen. Real quick, though, Ashtarothy, what is that Triglavian mystery that's happening right now?
Yeah, so to start, the Triglavian are the group of people who inhabit Abyss Space. We encountered them first in Abyss Space, and a lot of the new ships are all their ships. They are divided into three organizations known as Clods, and for months we have gotten some information from them. Originally, we were able to get shards of information out of their little balls that you can encounter in the in Abyss, and we learned some about their culture and who they like and who they don't like, and we tittered about that for a while, and then they released a video that played on every single channel in Eve and really solidified a lot of that stuff. So the Trig hate the Drifters. They are unsure about the rogue drones. They want us to prove ourselves, and they hate Sansha. That is the battle lines that have been drawn. Since then, in the most difficult abyssal sites, so in the tier 5 abyssal sites, people have started to discover two new things. One, in the caches, they have started to find these transponders that are associated with one of the three clods, and they have found this immense structure that seems to be being constructed and defended by a very large amount of very powerful Triglavians. And so unlike the other rooms, you basically just smash and grab the loot and run, because you're not going to be able to actually fight the forces that are there. There's been some pretty good video that have come out of that. And additionally, anyone who has those transponders are receiving secret mails from the clods in game that lead to videos that are piecing together to make some sort of schematic design of that giant ship, Titan station, whatever it happens to be. So something big is happening. It's building up. It really hit its next level once the invasion tour began. What was it, 2 weeks ago, a week or 2 weekends ago? And so as these events are happening in game and in real life, we're probably going to see a lot more about the Triglavians. We know there's new ships coming out, and it looks very much like there's new battle lines being drawn, and we will be chosen, or we will have to choose which side we want to be on.
All right, cool. We'll find out a bit.
I know very little about it. Uriel knows way more about it, and I'll throw it back to you.
Yeah, and so that will probably happen on Thursday. We're going to try to get Uriel on the show Thursday with Artemis and the gang talking about this specifically. Tune in to hear that again Thursday at, I guess, midnight UTC. And that's not a cat, that's a wife. we need to wrap up because people got to go and do things. I want to say one last thing, and this is the beginning of the season. So during this season, please do us a favor and subscribe or follow this channel so that you know when we're on. And if you can, give us a rating on iTunes and give us a rating on Spotify, wherever you can give us ratings, so that we can actually get found a little bit easier. We want to really emphasize that this time. I think that we put on a great show with a lot of talent behind it, but we only have like 5 people who've written reviews on iTunes, or we only have like, I think, 7 people who've given it 5 stars or something like that. And I think that if you want to help Talking in Stations, and it's not a good time for you to be a contributor through Patreon or even to subscribe through Twitch, then that may be something that you can do to help Talking in Stations get more publicity, so that basically other people that are starting Eve can find it. A lot of people have actually said, oh, I found Talking in Stations and now I'm going back to all the old issues, and you guys are great. We want to help people like that find the show sooner, so do that, please. Okay, thanks everyone. Really appreciate you watching. Thanks guys for showing up today. We got a lot to do in this season, but right now we're going to call it quits and go into our after party or after show public chat. Thanks everyone for showing up. That's all for Talking in Stations this week. We'll see you next week.